Hey everybody, this is Josh. I wanted to pop in briefly and preamble this episode because it is a re-upload of one of our earliest episodes. This is actually the third episode we ever recorded way back in the year 2017. So if you hear any weird edits where it sounds like our original voices have been replaced so that we now say cash grab instead of something else, you're not imagining it. This is also recorded before Trey became a permanent co-host, so it's just me and Rachel on this one. Despite not having the dulcet voice and well-researched wit that Trey brings to the cash grab cinema you know and love, we hope you enjoy this lost episode, and we'll be back in full force next time. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to Cash Grab Cinema. I just figured out how to unmute the microphone. Thank you for your applause.
You're a modern day genius.
I'm Rachel, and I'm joined, as ever, by my comely assistant.
I mean, homely is a step up, really. I've usually been described as hideous. My name is Josh. Hello.
Today we are going to be reviewing, wrap your mind around it, a parody of the 1813 novel, Pride and Prejudice, turned into a 2010 novel called Pride and Prejudice and Zombie, made into a movie in 2016, same title, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
That's right, a 2016 classic, modern classic, I'd say.
Soon to be cult classic.
They're going to actually let it enter into the next Oscar season, just because I think it got overlooked.
Definitely.
When it came out, it's that good. So we're going to be looking at this and seeing whether or not this film is a
cash grab.
Rachel, would you remind us, what is a cash grab?
Well, according to a dictionary I read one time,
cash grab
is anything produced by an artist solely for the means to make the artist money, but there was no intent of making quality content.
A dictionary that you just read one time? Did you buy a dictionary to look up the word
cash grab
and then threw it away?
Why would I buy a dictionary? You could just look at it at Barnes & Noble and then put it back on a different shelf because I'm a dick.
That's... Now you're using your brain balls. So if I can, I just want to talk about, there's two distinct opening scenes to this film.
It's like Lord of the Rings wouldn't end. This movie couldn't decide when to start.
Right. The opening scene, we meet one of our heroes, Mr. Darcy.
Mr. Darcy.
Colonel Darcy, as we later find out.
Sidebar, why are all the men cast as Darcy so greasy?
I think that's just, it's not necessarily a Regency era trope. I think it's more of a British actor trope.
You're thinking of Robert Pattinson, aren't you?
I am definitely thinking of Robert Pattinson. I'm also thinking about, sadly, about how I look so much like Robert Pattinson with my shirt off.
Well, you nipple hairs.
Yeah, I'm talking about long, disgusting nipple hairs. It's just sad.
Twilight, New Moon. Check it out. You'll see Josh's nipple hairs on there.
Only
he was a body double on that movie.
Right. Only in the UK, though, could someone as objectively hideous as Robert Pattinson be considered an absolute dreamboat.
Robert Pattinson, when you definitely listen to the third installment of... Those are not my thoughts.
Yeah, those are totally my thoughts. And my other thought is that we should move to the UK as soon as possible. Because if Robert Pattinson is a fox, then there's a chance that I might be.
Look out, United Kingdom.
That's right.
A sexiness that you can't quite deal with is coming your way.
We meet Darcy early on when he shows up at this estate, and there's a funny little exchange between him and this guy. He goes through a tunnel, and he has to be checked out to make sure that he's not infected by zombies. How do they check him out?
You gotta look for zombie bites. Where do you look for zombie bites? Well, according to this priest, on the penis.
Yeah, according to this... So... As he's getting checked out, he's been stripped down completely. There's this shot of this priest lustfully looking at Mr. Darcy's, I'm guessing, impressive man meat.
Well, from the look on that guy's eyes, very well endowed.
Yeah, he's never seen anything like it.
He goes to have a sausage later and thinks about it. So he's not a zombie, because there's no wiener bite. That's where I'm going to look. Zombie outbreak happens? All right, take your trousers off. I need to look at your wieners. This is how you check.
In this opening scene, we learn an awful lot about Mr. Darcy. First of all, he's no nonsense. He rarely smiles. This is a man who is quick to pull out the blade when it's time to kill anybody that he suspects of being a zombie.
You know what I learned about this, Mr. Darcy? The only thing you need in life is a leather trench coat.
He's got... It's the duster from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Him and Bingley are like trading off back and forth, and he won't give it back to Bingley.
It's his forever now. Yeah. Not a zombie, goes to the card party and releases some flies.
I thought that was actually a really clever touch.
I will give you that. After a while, you really do run out of ways of how to secretly discover someone's hiding a zombie bite.
Sure, and how are you going to do it before there was, you know, widespread electricity? You know, he doesn't have the technology of us modern people. I thought that it was a great way to describe how to hunt zombies on the fly by using flies.
Do you think he has a fly supplier?
I wondered about that. Never does he re-catch the flies. We never see any of that. We just see him reach into his trademark leather trench coat and pull out a bottle of flies.
From a very convenient pocket. Like, it's perfectly made for this bottle of flies.
He's had it tailored, obviously.
For his fly bottle.
During his sojourn to Japan, he had it custom made.
Do you think there's a fly shop right across the street from the leather trench coat store?
It's so weird. I mean, how do you collect flies and put them in a bottle? He's done it.
Into a bottle where the hole is barely big enough for the fly. So it's one at a time. What if one of them escapes? Like, oh, God, get back in there.
I mean, I'm sure at some point you're going to have to shove one in, you know, that doesn't want to go inside this bottle.
Help me.
Yeah, you're going to have a little Three Stooges situation. Whoop, 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 whoop.
So the flies find their target. The only ugly character in the room is definitely the zombie.
That's debatable.
Well, they didn't land on Darcy's greasy head. What if he lets these flies out and you just farted and the fly lands on your booty? I'm going to tell you something. This Darcy is going to kill you immediately.
This is coming from someone who's definitely had flies attracted to her fart smell before.
Real high and mighty.
I look like Robert Pattinson with my shirt on.
Yeah. So some flies may or may not, I'm pleading the fifth on that one, landed on my booty after farts. Let's talk about your nipple hairs some more.
Darcy kills this guy, the portly gentleman that unfortunately had flies land on him. But then it's...
After the flies landed on him, his eyes immediately turned red.
They did.
Did you notice that?
I did.
That was a quick change.
That was a quick change. That was so that all of the more dim-witted audience members would know, oh, I missed that part that he said before, but his eyes look kind of red, so I wonder if that guy's a zombie.
He dispatches the zombie with extreme prejudice, and then goes on to desecrate the body.
Yeah, he takes off the dude's head. The dude's head is just sitting on the floor. Then as he's leaving, very casually, he just kicks it right in front of his family. Like, his family's right there.
But before he leaves, he asks, did he travel with anyone? Oh, no, of course not, Mr. Darcy. He leaves, and then we find out he did travel with his niece. Someone goes upstairs to check on the niece. She has been zombified.
Oh, yeah.
And it's much clearer. No flies needed. Because half of her face has been CGI'd away. When I was watching this, I would not have been able to guess this was made in 2016.
No, this is the CGI mastery of, at the most, a 2005 film.
Yeah. It's very poorly done. And her eye, it's something that could have been done with makeup, which is why it surprised me they chose the CGI instead.
Yeah, I've seen practical zombie makeup way more convincing than what this was.
Now, firstly, I don't know what is more affordable, CGI or practical makeup, but it seems like they probably could have gotten off better, even if they had to spend more money to do makeup. It was so badly done. The bunny attack scene in Mark Harmon's Summer School is more convincing than this zombie girl.
Oh, that was masterful. After this initial introduction to Darcy, we're treated with yet another opening scene, but this scene is more exposition to explain how the zombie outbreak happened and sort of set up this world.
And how their zombies work, because it's a little bit different than regular zombies. So once they get bit, they're like half zombies, would you say?
Right, until the moment when they actually ingest a human brain.
Then they become full zombie.
Right. So it's kind of like Lost Boys and Half Vampires.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I was watching the movie.
Yeah. After this intro with Darcy, we're given this really great animated introduction with exposition explaining how the zombie outbreak occurred and how zombies in this world work. But what was incredible about this opening
scene? What I really liked about, and genuinely I liked it, strap in for some history. During the Regency era, making books became more affordable. So not just rich families could buy books for their children. Books for children became more mass marketed. And at the time, it was like a precursor to pop-up books. They were called movable books. And this opening scene looks like a Regency era movable book for children. It is so well done.
It's very well done. And it just, what I love about it is that it's not only visually stunning, but also historically accurate.
They really did their homework.
Which is what I go for when I watch a zombie movie.
I as well. I mean, they really did their homework and then they're like, well, that was boring. Let's not do that anymore.
Zombies!
A lot of the movie is that, mama talk, love, zombies!
Yeah. Let's talk about the Bennett family. What can we say about the Bennett family?
They were trained in China, which we know apparently, according to that movable book, isn't as good as being trained in Japan. But I want to question their training because we meet them cleaning their guns and they're all pointed at each other's faces like, hello, hello, love, I'm just cleaning my weapon pointed right at your face. Hopefully this ends well.
They're all cleaning their weapons and they're talking about who's gonna get married to who and all of
and the dance
and the dance, and there's all these markers that point back to this aristocracy that Jane Austen wrote about in Pride and Prejudice, which it's like the premise itself is actually quite funny. A zombie outbreak happens and the aristocracy is pretty much unchanged. I mean, that's really hilarious because in every zombie story I've ever heard, a zombie outbreak means the end of the world.
At least the society you understand.
Yeah, at least life as you know it. Yeah. Things are going to be drastically
People
different.
People aren't going to give a crap if they got Gucci bags anymore. Like, they're going to use a Gucci sweater to wipe their poops away. They just don't care anymore. But they most assertedly care in this. It's like a keep calm, carry on kind of thing. And I like it too. But at the same time, I'm just like, little asinine at the same time. Because the Bennett's mom still really cares. Like, marry someone rich because your father's a crap head and can't take care of you.
He let you train in China.
It's like he hates you.
And it's weird. It's set up that to train in China is somehow lesser than training in Japan because all the rich people could afford to go to Japan.
Why don't they just stay there?
I mean, yeah, exactly. Like, it's Japan. If it's safe enough that you can travel there and train, not have to worry about anything while you get good at killing.
I feel like Japan and China, they're just like, money.
Oh, I know why they came back, because they couldn't abandon their estates.
There it is.
So early on, we get to see what one of these Jane Austen era dances looks like. It's sort of a box social, I'd say.
About the lighting and all the dance scenes, I couldn't tell if I liked it or didn't like it, because they were all lit by candles, which is accurate historically, but it still made the scenes very confusing to watch. At the first dance, you have Jane and Lizzie standing together. I have no idea where they're looking to. They just cut to Darcy. There he is. Cut to Bingley. There he is. Cut to their mom. You have no idea how in the setup where any of these people are. They do pull out and push back in, you know, camera work. And I still can't tell. Where are you?
I don't know.
What are you looking at?
I wonder if they had to set the frame in such a way because they had to move like some giant candle holder with 1,000 candles on it every single time they needed to change shots.
And then, you know, half of them probably blew out while they were moving it. And the poor production assistant, like, I hate this job.
But I really respect that. I don't know whether or not they actually shot with candlelight. It does look like they did.
It looks like it.
It looks like they did. And I really respect that because it is, for me, a throwback to Barry Lyndon, which Kubrick did the exact same thing. So far, with the sort of mediocre very beginning, the really good movable book intro as well, and now, you know, using real candlelight to light a dance scene, I'm actually pretty impressed with the artistry in the film.
Costume design leaves a bit to be desired. It looks like something that would have been made on PBS before PBS started putting out the hotness.
Yeah.
I think we all know what I'm talking about. Back when PBS was just like, well, I'll watch it.
Well, playing the protagonist, Elizabeth Bennett, is Lily James. Most recently, she was featured in Baby Driver. If you don't know who she was in Baby Driver, she's the one that said, your name's Baby. B-A-B-Y, Baby. So
was her Southern accent that good?
It was pretty good, actually. It was impressive. I left there. It was a solid hour or so after seeing the movie when I was like, oh, that's Lily Jane. She's from Downton Abbey and stuff. That's crazy. Okay. But yeah, you're right about the costume. It looks like they just took the costume from some warehouse that, because, you know, in England, every third film production anyway is a period piece. So they just have some warehouse.
They just have these on stock.
Yeah.
On standby. I need a blue Regency dress. Warehouse B.
The costume designer was given 20 minutes and told roughly who would be featured in the film.
So we've got the dancing. Jane dances with Bingley, as like in the book. Lizzie gets rejected by Darcy, and she goes
out. Is Darcy as much of a jerk?
Yes.
In the book?
Okay. Yeah. He's a jerk in the beginning, in almost any iteration I can think of. Elizabeth storms outside, complaining about a jerk he is, and someone behind her says, I never cared for that Darcy. And then we don't know, as the audience, that that's actually a zombie. But she's only been bitten. She hasn't eaten a brain yet. So she's pre-zombie. And the zombie wants to tell Liz something, like, I've got something to tell you. She puts her fingers over her lips, says, shh, I have to tell you something.
And then in perfect jump scare fashion, her head explodes.
As Darcy blows it away, and so cockily, like, I saved you. Thank goodness I was here. The zombie was like 2 feet away from her. She could have just walked away casually and been all right.
At this point, Darcy's looking more like Gaston or from Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, so much like Gaston. I can't say if he looks like Gaston from the new live action one because I have not watched it yet, but very much the animated Gaston. He's auditioning for that in real time.
Yeah, with a huge wang.
That doesn't have zombie bites on it. I mean, it's so hot dog shaped. That's what they're going for.
Jesus Christ.
Hilarious line from Bingley at the dance. Jane is trying to talk to him about a library.
She's trying to impress him.
Yeah.
Right? By mentioning a library. Yeah. Oh, wait. Is that Liz?
No, she asked Jane. She asked, have you been to the Hertfordshire Library? It's quite lovely. Library? And then when they're dancing, he says, I have read.
Yeah, that's a great line. I use that all the time to impress anybody, coworkers. I just say, like, I've read books. Which books? Don't worry about which books, but I've read things before.
Menus.
Counts. Beginning, middle, and end. What else could we say about the characters?
Well, after the dance, we are greeted with the first of many zombie fights. It's strange in this movie how fortified the estates are and how easily they are overrun with zombies. Way more easily than anything we're greeted with in Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, these aristocrats are sparing no expense and no shortage of manpower to guard every possible side of their estates. Yet zombies keep getting through.
And not just like in the gardens, but like in the kitchens.
Yeah.
They are deep in the house already before anybody notices. And they're zombies, not these half zombies that can still talk. Going down, getting these girls. But the girls, the sisters, fight in the first zombie fight. It looks like the choreographer of these fights was really into the original Charlie's Angels.
I was going to say Charlie's Angels. It looked just like that, yeah.
Not a single drop of blood gets on their dress, their faces, their perfectly coiffed hair. They just look perfect.
That's because they train in China.
Oh, really?
China training is for the wise. Japanese training might be for the rich.
But. So the Chinese training teaches you about scotch guard? just rolls right off of you.
We get to know very early on that these girls are highly skilled. They're amazing killers. And what does it mean to the men in their life? Not much.
Except their dad.
Yeah, their dad gives them mad respect. He's also from Downton Abbey, I believe. He's been in just about everything.
I'm pretty sure he's in Downton Abbey, too. I'm not going to look. You guys can look. Check that out. Is the dad in Downton Abbey? Comment below if you know. We leave the fight scene. They've kicked zombie tail. They don't really explain what happened to the zombies, if they got all the zombies. We just skip back to the girls being at home, brushing each other's hair, giggling about Darcy. Then we're greeted with the same scene again, them talking about Darcy and Bingley, but they're fighting in the basement now. It's the same exact scene, but one of them, they were brushing hair. the other one they were fighting in the basement, going over the same stuff. What happened was they got to the end of the movie and they needed 15 more minutes.
Well, it's weird. It's the exact same thing that happens in cop procedural shows where two buddy cops will be talking about something in one location and then they'll be showing up at the police station picking up that conversation, meaning that they had that entire car ride back to the station and they just let it hang there. Just
in like, silence.
As soon as they get in the car, pause. But when you watch...
I'm driving. Do not distract me.
But when you're watching a cop procedural show, you tend not to notice because it's...
You just accept
it. You just accept it. That's just part of it. But when it happens in this movie, it is very jarring. It doesn't fit.
Mm-mm. It's odd. But after the fight, they get a letter, and Jane has been invited to tea. Just like in the book, just like in every movie, she has been invited to tea to...
Well, of course she is. She's the prettiest one. By far.
As the mother repeatedly reminds us over and over again, she's the pretty one. Liz is the not one.
And the other girls don't even get a look in.
Yeah. What are their names again? I don't know.
Something. We'll mention them as they become relevant, but they probably won't.
One of them never does. She gets invited to the tea. And just like in the movie, all the other movies and the books, her mother insists that Jane goes to Bingley on horseback instead of in a carriage. But it makes even less sense when you consider that there are zombies and it's about to start raining. And we learn that zombies can spring from the wet earth all the easier.
Well, yeah, Liz tells her that. But Liz would know. She trained in China.
So Liz informs the audience something that Jane already definitely knew. That the zombies spring easily. And the mom's like, it's fine. Just die. As long as you marry rich.
The actress that plays Mrs. Bennett, I thought, she is just incredible.
Choice.
I can't think of her name right now, but she's been in a ton of stuff.
She is definitely that lady from That Thing.
She is that lady from That Thing, British version. She was the space explorer from the episode of Hyperdrive that she was going to sail around the galaxy in her spaceship and she went crazy. She is hilarious.
Sally Phillips. Sally Phillips, we love you.
Yeah.
We looked up your name.
You're so funny.
Hilarious. She really is so funny. If you watch it just for her, worth it.
If you watch it just for her, as we're going to mention in just a couple minutes, you're missing out on something major. But she's still super awesome.
She's rocking it.
She's rocking
it. So funny. Sends her most prettiest daughter, her best financial asset, if you will.
Yeah, that's her best chance at not dying penniless.
In a pauper's grave. Pauper's grave?
Pauper.
Thank you. Sends her out on a horse. And then I hate it so much. Creepy baby.
Oh, baby zombies are the worst.
For me, it's not just even baby zombies. Any kind of creepy baby thing, I'm just like, no, yeah. Get it away.
And I would say, I would probably rank the creepiest baby I've ever seen in a movie was probably the baby from Trainspotting.
Well, that wasn't even a real baby, was it? It was
no.
Like he was having a nightmare?
Well, yeah. Because
tripping or something?
Yeah, because babies can't walk on ceilings.
Or
crawl on ceilings.
Wait, they can't.
But I would
put, I have to go call a priest.
I would put this zombie baby very close to the baby from Trainspotting. It's very creepy.
It's very creepy. It's even though it's still poorly CGI'd, for me it makes it all the creepier that he's with its zombie mom being held in a breastfeeding type position. That's what I thought was happening because it's right at breast level. Because
you know that baby is eating that boob. Nasty. Nasty.
Jane finds this breastfeeding baby, blacks out, passes out. They don't explain what happened. Jump cut to Elizabeth getting to the Bingley estate, wanting to tend to her sister. And there's Darcy, hus whispering, like, we can't let an outbreak happen.
Yeah, so they use this in a way to basically give the audience a little bit of uncertainty and tension and say, like, oh no, has Jane been bitten? Don't tell Mrs. Bennett. She'll be upset that her prettiest daughter is a zombie now. What this does is...
I feel like she'd chain her up and keep her in the basement and be like, she's all right. You could still marry her.
What this offers, it offers Liz the chance to have a little tete-a-tete with Mr. Darcy. Sorry, Colonel Darcy. And his... super
fly montage.
His super rich friends that they all trained in Japan, and they have this back and forth about, you know, what's better and what makes a proper woman.
You haven't read Of Art and War in its original Wu dialect? Like, they're both pompous.
Yeah, they are both 19th century hipsters.
Very much so. Elizabeth goes to tend to her sister, who is sick. We learn that she didn't get bit. Her hand was injured from her musket backfiring, and she is just sick with like a cold. But Darcy has come in there to let his flies loose to see if she's been zombified, while Liz catches all the flies without even looking. She's better than Karate Kid.
Well, to be fair, she was using her hand and Mr. Miyagi was using chopsticks. But yeah, he was still hunting the same fly for years.
And looking at it.
Right.
She doesn't even have to look. Like, got it. She smushes all the flies in her hands after she catches them and gives them back to Darcy. So I wonder if he didn't have a fly supplier. Those were all the flies he had.
What's he gonna do now?
He's out of luck.
No more detecting zombies, that's for sure.
She single-handedly destroys the rest of London because she killed all those flies. He doesn't even know who's pre-zombie and who's just a human.
Liz collects Jane and the whole family goes back to the Bennet estate. And we are finally introduced to the saving grace of this movie.
Mr. Collins.
Parson Collins.
Parson Collins.
Parson Collins. Played by the absolutely terrific Matt Smith. That's right. The 11th Doctor. The kid. Mr. Matt Smith.
How much of his lines do you think was improvised? Like 80% or 100%?
Well, having not read the book, I don't know what Mr. Collins says in Pride and Prejudice, but I can only imagine if he's not ad-libbing, it really, really sounds like everything that he said. He's just such a good actor. Everything that he says is so incredibly funny.
Lady Catherine de Bourgh says my feet work is excellent.
Yeah, she says I'm so light on my feet.
Oh. Oh.
I think that Matt Smith is able to accomplish the perfect embodiment of this pompous, completely with no sense of self-awareness, and really, really rude without realizing it, of course. He's basically a sociopath. Basically, he's
the most adorable sociopath.
And he's just fit. Everything that he says is so funny. And
I feel like he was the only actor to understand that this was a parody of Pride and Prejudice. I feel like everyone else took it much too seriously. And because Matt Smith didn't take it seriously, or it seemed like he didn't, he really delivers an impeccably hilarious character to us.
I agree. I think that if you watch this movie for nothing else, just for the Matt Smith parts, you won't be completely disappointed because he's so good.
Yeah, once he comes in around the 30-minute mark, you'll be like, okay, worth it. Almost erases the zombie baby terror from my brain. Not all the way. You might not be able to have children after this. Because if you hear them giggling in their crib at night, you'll be like, oh God, zombie baby. Shortly after we are gifted by the delightful Matt Smith, we are burdened with the Wickham character in this movie.
Oh yeah, here's this Wickham character coming out of nowhere. And now, was Wickham in the original Pride and Prejudice?
Okay. Wickham is there, and he is a scum, just like in this movie. But it's so strangely delivered. Why does it look like he, instead of dyeing his hair, they would just like got some shoe polish, rubbed it into his scalp, and they're like, banging. You look amazing. Don't touch your head.
Well, that was all the rage.
What? It looks ridiculous. Then we're in another dance, poorly lit dance. Still can't quite see what's happening. And yet again, more zombies get in this super safe house. What do the guards do? Like, oh, finally, they're dancing. Sit down, take a nap. They're all pre-zombies, actually. But right. The rich people, they can't tell.
Quick question, because I never read, I haven't read Pride and Prejudice. I haven't read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. You know,
I would let you borrow my book, but Kayla still has it. Kayla, if you're listening to this, give me my book back, girl.
How would you describe the balance between the Jane Austen bits and the zombie bits in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
In the movie?
In the book.
Okay, in the book, they go along quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell the author did his research. This was a novel he must have at least cared deeply about, even if he didn't love it. Like, he respected the importance of it, and the zombie parts just get peppered in beautifully. In the movie, you can definitely tell the difference between when it's lines plucked straight from Jane Austen and when it's lines plucked straight from the Pride and Prejudice and Zombie, and when it's lines that the screenwriter had to come up with. He bought a thesaurus and he was like, all right, 50 cent words, throw it in. Zombie parts! Love these zombie parts.
Which is really weird, because you wouldn't really have to do all that if you did the zombie parts right.
Can we talk about, so an orphanage falls to the zombies.
Right? Yes.
And during the second dance when the zombies get in, it is the children from the orphanage zombies. One of them could have just had black makeup applied around his eyes. Instead, they went into After Effects by someone who didn't know how to use After Effects and just put two black shadows. It's so obvious. And why do these orphans have such posh accents? We aren't greeted by a Cockney-sounding accent until nearer to the end of the movie, and two soldiers have anywhere remotely a different accent other than a posh accent.
Well, I mean, you know, rich ladies give their kids up for adoption too.
All the time.
All the time. There's all kinds of famine and zombies. Maybe they were orphaned by zombies, you know?
I'm such a monster.
Why? How could you even do that? What's funny about the zombie orphanage?
I'm so sorry.
As the Bennets are heading to the party at Mr. Bingley's estate, they pass by where the orphanage is, and there's just like a shit ton of zombie kids in the front yard, and Mrs. Bennet's just like, oh no, zombies got to the orphanage. Shame. It's just this real throwaway comment. It's hilarious.
As they hold their guns. Real sad about those children.
We meet Wickham, which for the first few minutes of the film where that he was featured, I thought they were saying Wiggum, and I got really excited. I was like, that's where Chief Wickham got his name. So Wickham, he's...
Listen here, Lou.
He's set up. He's a scumbag, but we're not sure that he's a scumbag yet, and neither does Liz. And there's...
She's a little smitten. She meets him in the woods at some point after this party. Mr. Collins propositions her for marriage. She rejects him. I cannot marry without affection, mother, and runs off into the woods. The amount of time people run off into the woods in this zombie-laden universe. It's like, what are you doing? At least take a gun, girl.
She doesn't need a gun. She trained in China.
Then take a sword.
Tonight's podcast is brought to you by Shaolin Training in China.
But she meets Wickham in the woods. He offers to take her somewhere. He's never shown another living soul. They show it on the map how far away she's gone with him.
I mean, it's like hours.
Yes. It's to the point where you'd be a little... I would start to get uncomfortable just like, so I'm going to get murdered. Like, where are we going? Why is this taking so long? I no longer trust you. So they get to St. Lazarus Church. And I looked this up. Apparently he is a real saint. And in this church, it's nothing but pre-zombies. And a priest, who I think is a real person still. Wickham proposes that they should work with the pre-zombies to control the zombies. And it doesn't sound like the worst idea.
Right.
Until later on, when you realize he's probably just doing it for money.
Yeah, there's this whole backstory with Wickham that he's really despicable and he only cares about people for money and he'll do anything to get it. Is that from the original Pride and Prejudice?
Yeah.
The same thing? Okay, so nothing really different there. Just with this additional layer of the St. Lazarus Church and these half-zombies.
Half-zombies.
He goes to Lady Catherine herself and... Sorry.
Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
As Mr. Collins will be quick
Parson
to tell you.
Parson Collins.
Sorry, as Parson Collins will be quick to tell you, he is a close confidant
of Lady Catherine de Bourgh. My cottage sits on the estate of Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Oh, Matt Smith is so good.
But it's so obviously gay for Darcy in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he's still going to marry Charlotte Lucas, just like in the book.
Right.
But he's super gay. He also wants to check his wiener for bite marks. He wants to feel for them, too.
Well, that was the duty of the local clergy at the time.
That's sacrifice. that he has to make.
They were very quick to raise their hands when somebody asked for volunteers. The entire clergy. We'll do it!
We'll check the weenus.
Yeah, but he might be gay, but he's still gonna marry that lady. He's not gonna live outside of the status quo. He is far too aristocratic for that.
He'll just be lusting, looking for bite marks.
And Miss Charlotte Lucas will just be stuck in a loveless marriage.
Well, Charlotte Lucas, just like in the book, knows that Parson Collins is the most she can hope for because she's 25. In Regent Sierra, she is two cats away from crazy cat lady status.
Right. At 25, she's going to have a Logan's Run moment where she looks at her hand and the gym is
yeah, but beeping. Instead of gyms, it's just a cat meowing. So she sees a chance to seize this man, and she does. I mean, he is hilarious, so.
I mean, yeah, he's got that going for him. She'll be entertained.
At least. No matter, at the men's.
Yeah, no matter how unfulfilled she is in the bedroom, she will laugh.
Wickham gets in to see Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
He makes his case.
To makes his case because she is the richest woman in all the land because she is the best swordsmith in all of England.
Which gets you money somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I guess after you kill the zombies, you pickpocket them.
That's clever.
He asks her for the money. She says no in a very dismissive manner. And Darcy has him kicked out by the guards. Because Darcy is Lady Catherine de Bourgh's nephew. And he's going to marry his first cousin. Because he is promised to Lady Catherine de Bourgh's daughter.
Oh, Darcy is.
Yeah. Regent Sierra was gross.
Yeah, that's disgusting. A lot of
Parson Collins is Elizabeth's cousin.
Yeah.
A lot of cousin stuff. They say the South is gross.
Well, I mean, Pride and Prejudice is probably the most popular in Louisiana for all the cousin talk. Ah, I'm sorry, Louisiana.
We are in the Southern state. How dare you? Just because it's true doesn't mean you have to broadcast it. No need to confirm it for everyone.
I meant Alabama. Damn it.
Every time Liz is supposed to find... is supposed to be watching Darcy and thinking, you know, seductive wiener bite thoughts about him, is the only time he takes his leather jacket off and he's out in the dark in the yard, you know, zombie adjacent like a moron, cutting down topiaries, and she is just so taken with him.
I mean, that's the hottest thing that happens. Forget about all the cleavage from the Bennett girls. That Mr. Darcy.
In his almost see-through white shirt getting wet.
Mm-hmm. Chopping down bushes. I think we all know what that represents. The weird thing is, I think that the film has a really strong opening and a pretty so-so middle. But once all of the drama sort of gets ratcheted up with Wickham and Darcy and Liz, and we come to find out after Wickham goes to Lady Catherine de Bourgh and asks for the money, gets rejected, he runs off with the youngest of the Bennett sisters. Am I right?
Yeah. Before he runs off, he tells Liz, oh, your sister got dumped by Bingley because Darcy convinced him to do it.
Mm.
She confronts Darcy about this after he proposes marriage to her. In the strangest way, like, I guess I like you, let's do it.
Yeah, it was the most clinical proposal
I'd ever even heard. For a Darcy character, it was very clinical. She confronts him about, you know, meddling in Jane and Bingley's relationship. Like, I just wanted to protect my friend. And they proceed to have the lamest fight.
It's so lame.
It's very poorly cut. You can clearly see when it's extras and when it's them. And then he cuts a button off of her already heaving Regency dress bosom so you can see more of her boobs, just like...
Hashtag down blouse.
Get that hashtag trending, y'all. Hashtag down blouse.
That was super lame. And this is the point that I wanted to raise. It seems that at about this time in the movie, everything sort of seems to come to a grinding halt, right? And the last 40 minutes or so of the film, there are plot things that happen. The little sister basically gets kidnapped by this crazy dude Wickham. Liz and Darcy hatch a plot to save her. But, you know, it just, everything really, really slows down.
We were shooting everything in slow-mo at this point, just trying to meet the quota.
trying to get feature length. It was really, really slow, but eventually Darcy and Liz go and save the little sister and make it back just in time before the only bridge between the aristocratic countryside and London proper, which has by now been completely overrun with zombies.
They call it the in-between.
They cross the bridge just in time to get across it before it blows up. In a pretty impressive explosion, actually.
What is it? Ever since that 1995 miniseries, Pride and Prejudice, where Colin Firth jumps into the lake with his white shirt still on and comes out slowly and reveals his nipples through his shirt. Why is it that every Pride and Prejudice movie is just like, yeah, let's do that?
I don't know.
Darcy goes by himself, jumps in a lake fully clothed, like, I must, because they told me to in production.
It's weird. I wonder if Colin Firth was just so incredibly sexy as Darcy. And every woman who saw that miniseries version, they're expecting it. So every Pride and Prejudice that comes,
every woman is just waiting for the lake scene to judge whether this Darcy is sexy or not.
Right. It's, yeah.
There's no way to know until he comes out of the lake sopping wet. Right.
Yeah.
It's the first bath he's had in a while.
He's for 5 seconds. He's not that greasy. And then the grease collects.
As he dives in, a small grease puddle appears on the water.
And then he immediately dives into some mud to hunt for some flies.
That's his fly supplier.
Mm-hmm.
The lake. He gets his own flies. That's what he was going for. More flies. Wickham has taken one of the little sisters. Again, they are so unimportant up to this point. I can't tell you which one it was. One of them is taken to St. Lazarus, and Jane wants to go save them, as well as Lizzie. They want to go save the little sister. They meet up with Bingley and Darcy's like, oh no, St. Lazarus was razed to the ground.
He tells Liz, like, oh yeah, dude, your sister, she got. Sorry, dog, she's dead as shit.
And he does this so he can protect her to not go there, and he goes there instead to save him. Is that really you couldn't have been at least nice about it? Like, he doesn't even seem sorrowful that she's dead. Like, yeah, died. I mean, you got, like, two more, right?
I mean, he's pining for this woman, right? I mean, what a weird way to show your affection.
He wants to see more.
I was protecting your feelings
by
making her you think that she was dead.
He definitely wants to see more than just the top shelf of her boobs.
They go, they save the sister. Darcy and Wickham have a sword fight that lasts for something like 7 hours.
12 hours?
It's pitch black dark. It's the middle of the night when they begin their sword fighting. And they don't end the sword fight until dawn.
They would have died from exhaustion. I don't know a lot about the sword fighting, but isn't the sword quite heavy? Like, the fact that they can still swing that much. And you could tell even the actors were probably getting tired because the guy who plays Wickham hard grips the side of the sword where the, you know, the cutty part is and doesn't lose any fingers.
That's just how skilled he was. I wonder if he trained in China.
Like, for this role?
Right.
Like, went to China.
So Darcy and Liz get back across the bridge just in time.
Oh, I think we accidentally glossed over something, that Wickham is pre-zombie. We learn from the sword fight because his jacket gets ripped open and he has been bit on the chest.
What's unfortunate is that the movie's been moving so slow at this point that when the reveal happens that Wickham is a pre-zombie,
not just you, Josh.
Yeah.
No one could care less. Well, there's that. Yeah, he's been bit.
So they get across the bridge just in time. There's that amazing trope of, you know, they get across, they're starting to go across the bridge, it explodes, and Jane and Bingley have no idea whether or not they're still alive.
Cool guys don't look at explosions. And then we have the trope of Liz coming to, I'm all right. Oh no, Darcy. I'll declare my undying love to your corpse as rocks are on fire around me. Is that how explosions work? It's just like dots of rock fire. And then you're left with not knowing if Darcy lived or not. And then you cut to Bingley coming in, asking for Jane's hand in marriage. And then Darcy comes in and he is alive. I heard everything you said on the bridge. It kept me going. Like, when are we gonna stop doing that?
It's just terrible.
So lame.
It seems like the film is trying to feed several different audiences at once and sort of didn't do the greatest job of doing any of them.
They're trying to please two masters. They wanted to make a sappy romance movie, but they also wanted to make an action flick with zombies in it.
Right.
And they didn't do either of those things. And then after we find out that Darcy is alive,
he proposes to Liz in the most romantic of ways that you could hope for from a greasy Darcy.
Yeah. With no smiling.
No.
Doesn't get down on one knee. None of that.
Very little emotion. But anyway, it was okay. And then we have the happiest of happy endings as Parson Collins marries Jane to Mr. Bingley and Liz to Colonel Darcy all at the same time.
He's still wearing that leather trench coat.
You better believe it. That trench coat goes everywhere with him. The only place it doesn't go, it only doesn't go two places. That leather coat does not go into the garden at night to when he's chopping down the topiaries, and it doesn't go into the lake because it'll get wet and probably ruined.
So it's definitely still on when they're in the boudoir, is what you're saying.
Oh, you better believe it. I could see Darcy be like, the jacket doesn't come off.
Check my wiener for lies. I'll check your bosom. You check my wiener.
The two sisters get married. They're having a good time. There are flower petals raining down from the heavens like manna.
You see some people throwing petals, and then they pan skyward, and the petals are coming from clouds, I guess?
And then the happy ending is cut short when
there's Wickham still alive with his zombie horde coming. So they're at Lady Catherine de Bourgh's, supposedly the most secure place in all of England.
Outside the gate.
And then you see they pan to the zombie horde. The gate is open and there's just like this flimsy, low, you could step over it, brick wall and some topiaries and no guards. That's security for you.
You think zombies are going to step over a hedge? Come on.
If it's gracefully trimmed, I mean, manners would say no.
Right, exactly. And that's what they're counting on. They're counting on the manners.
These are Regency era zombies.
Right.
They have some manner of decorum.
They can play cards.
Yeah, until the fly lands on them and immediately turns them into red-eyed monsters. Pride and Prejudice and zombies. Is it a cash grab or a genuine attempt at art that just went...
I tend to think, actually, for the first time in this podcast, that this film is not a
cash grab.
I'd say it is a genuine attempt at art, despite the fact that it is yet another remake, reimagining, re-cashing in on Jane Austen stories that's been done a million times before. Despite all that, I think it was an actual attempt at a fresh take and some artistic nuance.
I would like to counter that very clear, thought-out argument with
cash grab.
And the only thing that makes me lean that way is this movie is based off of a best-selling novel written by somebody who at the time already had two other best-selling novels out. He wrote, after the first book, he wrote a sequel. It was made into a comic book. It was made into a game, an app for your iPod Touch or your iPhone. And it was also made into a line of clothes for Hot Topic.
Was it?
Yes, it was.
Oh my God, I've got to get some Pride and Prejudice and Zombies gear.
A clothing collection inspired by the Regency era fashion and, quote, inner zombie slayer. That was in 2011.
Wow.
And then made into this movie.
So you're saying that the author of the book never missed an opportunity to cash a check on this idea of his?
Oh, most assertedly, he did not miss an opportunity. This is the same author that brought us Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer.
Right.
Which was also made into a movie. And he also wrote Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters.
Oh, yeah. I remember that vaguely. Again, I didn't read it. I feel like I echo myself a lot. Like, didn't read it.
That's why I feel it's a cash grab. Because he definitely, like you said, wasn't missing an opportunity to cash that check. Do I fault him for that? Absolutely not. He got lucky that he wrote a few books and they became smash successes. And he was like, well, keep that gravy train going, biscuit wheels.
Yeah, no kidding. If I fell ass backwards into money, I don't think...
I'm going to be pretty happy about it.
Sure.
My ass will be cushioned by all the dollars. When you get your $1 million, you're going to put it in a book bag?
Throwback Thursdays.
Oh, yeah, it is Thursday. Rude. There you have it. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. 50% of viewers think it's a cash grab. That's right. Just me and Josh watch this. Nobody else. If you want to watch it, feel free. If you like zombies and you like history pieces, you might like this.
Yeah, if you like British character actors, you might like this. There's a lot of reasons that you...
If you only like Matt Smith, you might like this.
If you only like Sally Phillips, you might like this.
She's hilarious.
Yeah, there's a lot to like, and there's a lot to groan about, I think. Well, that's it from us at
Cash Grab
Cinema. Thank you so much for listening.
Join us next week. We haven't decided what we're going to watch next. Maybe suggest some stuff to us on our Twitter at
Cash Grab
Cinema.